The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, I warn you that Joel Rosenberg would be on this program. And when I warn you, it's going to come true. I prophesied it. Here he is, folks. Here he is, Joel Rosenberg from Jerusalem. L'chaim, what's up?
L'chaim, it's great to be with you.
I'm in New York.
Right, Passover and Happy Easter, and it's just great to be with you again, Eric. It's been too long.
I don't know why. Like, it's been a long time. Normally, you're cranking out these books and stuff, and I'm amazed that you keep writing these astounding thrillers. The new one, just so people know, the headline, it's called The Beirut Protocol, and it sounds like a kind of a creepy thing that doctors would threaten you with. Like, if you don't take your vitamins, we're going to have to resort to the Beirut protocol.
Oh,
and you
God
know what that is, don't you? You don't want the Beirut protocol. It's very invasive, very uncomfortable. So I want to talk to you about the Beirut protocol. Like, everything you write, it's ripped out of the headlines. I'm trying to think. And I want to talk to you about what's going on in Israel right now. You do live in Jerusalem. Obviously, I live in New York, almost as Jewish, not quite. But we're following closely what's going on over there. Why don't we start there, Joel? You do write books that seem ripped out of the headlines because you stay very closely involved. You were an advisor to Netanyahu. What is happening right now for those of us who are just not paying attention?
Okay, so we're going to deal with the real world and not fiction for a moment, right?
For the real world first, and then fiction. Yeah,
because life here is stranger than fiction. Israel, we always like to say we are the only real democracy in the Middle East, which is true, but we apparently love elections so much that we've had four in 2 years, four rounds of national elections. And the reason
I'm all for voting, but that's getting crazy.
I've been a U.S. Israeli citizen, dual citizen for 7 years. I voted five times. Okay. Now, I have Palestinian friends that have only voted once in their life because there's only been one election in the history of the Palestinian people. So that's just, you know, that is a little crazy. But here's why. The reason why is because Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and yes, I worked for him, but that was 20 years ago. So I'm not close to him. I know his team. But Netanyahu is struggling politically. He's the longest serving prime minister in the history of Israel. So he must be doing something right? People like him and they want him. And he's had a hugely impressive several years. He persuaded President Trump to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. He persuaded Trump to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He persuaded Trump to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. He negotiated successfully with Trump's help four, not just one, two, three, four Arab-Israeli peace agreements. So you'd think Netanyahu would be winning in a landslide. But the problem is there's two problems. The first problem that Netanyahu faces is that COVID has ravaged this country. We've had 6,200 deaths here. And I know by American standards on a continent, that doesn't seem like that many. But Eric, you have to understand that 6,200 deaths here is more than all the people in Israel who have died in war and acts of terror in more than 25 years, okay? So that's big here in this country. And Netanyahu's handled it badly, admittedly. Now, he's doing better with the vaccines. We're at almost 90% of those who are eligible and want to have it, have at least one shot. I've had all of our shots. My whole family has. So it's getting better. The country's reopening, but the economy's been devastated. The airports have been closed. 70,000 businesses have gone belly up. And people are angry at Netanyahu. Yeah, you're good making peace deals, but what about us? That's the feeling here. Real quick, Netanyahu is also facing, he's on trial for three separate corruption cases. Now, I consider him innocent until proven guilty, but it's still weighing on him politically.
Right.
The last thing, and maybe the most important one, is that Netanyahu is a brilliant leader, but he, in the American context, I would put him like Newt Gingrich. There's genius Newt, and then there's the, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me, Newt. Like the moments that he, in his day, what it was, you know, you would get to see all the sausage getting made, and he would make deals and they wouldn't keep them and he backstab, you know. So the problem is that so many, Netanyahu has ticked off so many leaders of so many parties here. He can't persuade enough of them to form a government with him.
Is he a little bit like Trump in some ways?
Well, in some ways, I mean, certainly highly controversial, risk-taking, bold, knows where he's going, but, you know, not everybody loves it, hated by the press. Yes. But Netanyahu has been on the political scene here for a quarter of a century. He's got a lot of experience. Trump was new, right? And made right. some rookie mistakes. And so the basic problem is that of 120 seats in our Knesset, 97 are pretty much either on the center or the right. That shouldn't be hard to put together a 61 seat government. It's Netanyahu. He just has ticked off so many people for lots of reasons, mostly not policy. Mostly it's abrasive style, and it's sort of catching up on him. And there that's the short version. We're really in a mess here politically.
Well, I have to say, it's just fascinating to hear about this, because most of us in the United States, you know, unless you're really connected to Israel, you're not following this closely. But what are the dangers of his losing the prime minister position? Who would get it, and what would the results be?
So Netanyahu's greatest asset at the moment is that there isn't someone who's just so obviously the other guy. There are a bunch of smaller parties, and they're all trying to figure out whom should they put forward now that the vote is done. And now that they're about to, in the parliamentary process, it's very different without getting into the weeds. Who should they put forward as the not Netanyahu candidate, right? And who will be the consensus candidate for change, for removing Netanyahu? So they're trying to figure that out.
If they put forward Pope Francis, I just want to say, if they put forward Pope Francis, we'll know that he's the Antichrist. But I just wanted to throw that in. Go ahead.
Okay. So no comment to that.
No.
Here's another way to slice this. People know that Iran is gaining it's becoming tremendously dangerous. It has been dangerous, but under Trump, it was some semi-contained. But under Biden, they're beginning to move very dangerously towards enriching far more uranium, getting close to bomb-grade uranium, capturing ships, attacking people.
Are you saying that Biden is weak and incompetent?
Biden is certainly he looks weak. I would like to say, Eric, in fairness, I'd like to say that just because the Obama-Biden administration made a terrible deal with Iran doesn't mean that Biden and his team might not have learned some lessons. But so far, we've seen no evidence that they know how to be tough with Iran.
And well, the don't they believe – but isn't this because they believe that being tough with Iran is a mistake? Don't they believe that, you know, the enemy of my enemy – is my friend, and Iran. It seems to me to be the case when you're talking about Democrats and mostly liberals, when they're dealing with enemies, they shrink at the idea of being too strong. I mean, they didn't like Reagan. They didn't like W. They kind of feel like, you know, being saber rattling and threatening, we don't do that. And of course, if you don't do that, you know, a big part of how you negotiate is removed. And so it strikes me that all they have left is like, we're going to be nice to you, and we're going to really hope that you're nice back. And why would anybody be nice back? What's in it for them?
Eric, you're absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons that in my political thrillers, I try to show this, because it's hard to explain in lots of op-eds, at some point, right, I try to take people into this world where the key is the nature of the Iranian regime.
Now, hold on, Joel, forgive me. When we come back, I want to pick up on that, and then I want to get into your new book, The Beirut Protocol, where you lay this kind of stuff out. Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. The book is The Beirut Protocol. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Don't go away.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg, the author of The Beirut Protocol and a zillion other thrillers ripped out of the headlines. You were just talking about Iran, and we had to cut you off to go to the break. Please continue what you were saying about Iran.
Yeah, well, Eric, the key is the nature of the Iranian regime. President Obama and then Vice President Biden made a bet in the Iran nuclear deal, which was that the Iranian regime is not a hostile and tyrannical and genocidal regime. They are misunderstood. Yeah, they're not us, but you just need to give them an on-ramp back onto the superhighway of international diplomacy and commerce because they feel left out. But that's insane. That's insane. If you study
the mullahs feel left out. Think about it. Think about, you know, an 8th century theocracy wanting to get in the game in the free market. It's not right that we should keep them out.
Well, that's right. And I've studied the regime very, very closely and interviewed all kinds of leaders who've studied them closely, intelligence officials. And I've spent time with all of the Arab leaders in the region, the leaders of Saudi Arabia, the leaders of the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, Jordan, Bahrain, Israel. And I talked to their spy chiefs. I talked to their kings and crown princes, and they tell me, listen, you have to understand something about the Iranian regime, not the people, but the regime. And right, that is this. It's not radical Islamism. This is apocalyptic Islamism. The Ayatollah, the supreme leader, he believes that if you the way to hasten the coming of their so-called Messiah, savior, the Mahdi, or the 12th Imam, this
or figure, the Antichrist. Yeah.
We would consider him an Antichrist. And this person who's going to come and build a global caliphate, not just Syria and Iraq, but the whole world. The supreme leader of Iran believes the way you do that is you annihilate two countries, Israel, the country I live in, the little Satan in his view, and the United States, which he calls the great Satan. And the
Wait
way
a minute.
You get ready to annihilate is
I
to
live
build
in the United
weapons.
States. Alvin and I live in the United States. No, you know, Joel, I have to joke around because this is so sick. You're telling us what many of us know, and we have a State Department. I mean, they're like 80% jugheads in the American State Department, let's face it, and they've been so back to the beginning. They are so naive and so out of touch with what is going on in these other countries. When you're talking about apocalyptic Islam, you have to understand you are dealing with crazy people. You're dealing with people who are suicide bombers. There's nothing in it for them. There's no carrot. They want to die in the cause of the God that they worship, who is not God. And the fact that the Biden administration and the Obama administration didn't understand this doesn't surprise me. But you do think that people whose job it is to understand these things would understand these things. I want to.
You want to think that. But here's the main thing. And this pivots back to this new novel, The Beirut Protocol, because the number one way that Iran would retaliate if Israel felt it had to use force to take out these nuclear facilities because the Biden administration is becoming so weak, they won't do it. The number one retaliatory option for Tehran is the terrorist organization in Lebanon known as Hezbollah. They have 150,000 missiles pointed here at Israel. And in the last war that Israel fought with Hezbollah in Lebanon in 2006, 15 years ago, Hezbollah fired 4,000 Iranian-built missiles at us in 34 days. Now, what I write about in the Beirut Protocol is a scenario in which this thing goes off and we're being fired at by 4,000 missiles a day. This is the scenario that's growing, that's brewing. And unfortunately, it's, you know, I'm writing fiction, but it's something that could happen in the next year or two because Americans, you and I have not talked because there's been so much news domestically in America
to focus on.
But what's cooking in Israel and in this region is not just a wonderful set of peace agreements. That's awesome, historic, fabulous. Trump and his team should win Nobel Prizes up the yin yang. But at the same time, the enemies of Israel, the United States, and our Arab friends are furious, and they're getting ready to do something very, very dangerous. And the Beirut Protocol is a political thriller that looks at what if it's this? What if the Lebanon theater is the one that goes off? It's a horrific scenario.
I want to ask you a question. I was recently in Dallas talking to the folks at Iran Alive Ministries. Yes. And I was on their program and they broadcast into Iran. It's a stunning thing. Anybody who wants to give to a truly great earth-shaking ministry, Iran Alive Ministries. But I say this because they are, you know, you talk about boots on the ground. I mean, they are really in tune with what's going on among the people.
We say sandals over here, Eric, but, you know, whatever. Boots.
Yes, exactly.
Stay culturally appropriate.
Sandals on the ground. And they basically...
And the sandals on the sand.
They are basically...
there. You're losing your concentration.
I never thought about that. It's sandals on the sand. Well, the fact of the matter is, Iran Alive Ministries, really know what the people are thinking. And so they're broadcasting these gospel messages into the country via satellite, and the regime can't keep it out. And what they tell me is that there are millions of Iranians who hate the regime, the mullahs and this theocratic, apocalyptic strain of Islam who runs the country. Much of the country despises them and wants to get rid of them. You don't hear this in the New York Times. This is a fact that there are tons of secular Iranians who hate the theocratic fake God. You know, there's something about it that's so oppressive. It's everything every atheist hates about religion is summed up in the strain of Islam that you have in the Iranian leadership at this point. Then you have lots of people who they're not opposed to the idea of God, but they know that the God of the mullahs, something's wrong. So the point of all this is that innumerable folks in Iran are coming to faith in Jesus. You don't hear about this. And my friends at Iran Ministry say is that they actually think it's gotten to a point where Iran could become a Christian nation within a number of years only, because it is so, the number of conversions has been so dramatic. And I think those of us in the West, we don't hear a word about any of this. We don't hear about the hatred of the people in Iran for their leadership. We kind of act as though the leadership is the country. And in this case, very obviously, that's just not true. So there are all kinds of options and openings.
You're absolutely right, Eric. And this is one of the things I want to add. You know, yes, I wrote the Beirut Protocol. I write these political thrillers to take people inside, to thrill them, to keep them up all night till they're cursing me because it's 6 a.m. and they're still reading. But also to not just entertain, but educate. But I've also launched two websites starting September 1st of last year, All Israel News and All Arab News. And one of the interviews we did was with the head of Iran Alive Ministries, because nobody else is covering him except you. And that is Dr. Hormoz Sharia, is many years of friend with me. Here I'm a Jewish convert to faith in Jesus. He's a Shia Muslim convert to faith in Jesus. And what's fascinating about Hormoz is in 1979, he and his wife were on the streets of Tehran shouting death to America, death to Israel. Then they thought, well, you know, maybe not death to America quite yet. We'd like to go to graduate school over there. And it was in the United States, Southern California, where they went through weather shock and culture shock and marriage shock. They were struggling. They were on the road to divorce. And some young women befriended the wife and shared the gospel of Jesus Christ with her. She came to faith. Hormoz was furious. I mean, I don't know if you can say about an Iranian, he went ballistic. But the point is, he was like, how can you do this? We're Shias. But then he thought, well, she is nicer to me. So he began to study the Quran and the Bible. And he came to conclude that you can't, it's either or. And he came to conclude that the Bible was right. And this transformed his life. All Israel News, All Arab News, what we're trying to do is to give day-to-day coverage to the people that are shaping the Middle East and the stories you never read, you're never going to hear in the New York Times, in the Washington Post. Part of that is bias, meaning like hard bias, but some of it's just soft bias. They just don't get it. They don't understand it. They're not going to pick up on stories like this one that are actually very interesting and are changing a society in ways that we just don't see. And so there's two things going on in Iran. There's the clique at the top, and then there's everybody else, but they're trapped. They're enslaved to the supreme leader.
It's amazing. We're just about out of time, but I'm glad you know Hormoz Shariat, Dr. Hormoz Shariat. As I say, I don't know if I mentioned it, but we had him on this program a couple of months ago. Good. And in Dallas, I was able to get to know him and to be on his program. But when you hear the details of what his life has been like and what is happening, how many millions of people watch the program, it's astounding. Like literally 10 million people are watching the program. You think that cannot be. In America, we don't have any program watched by 10 million people, but it is Iran Alive.
Eric Metaxas of Iran.
Yes, exactly. I'm as close as you can get. But seriously, it's so wild. And you hear nothing about this. That's why it's fun to talk to you. We're going to be right back with Joel Rosenberg.
You used to say,
hey, folks, you certainly heard me talk about MyPillow and how their products have literally changed my life. Now, have you tried the pillow? They don't go flat. You can wash them, dry them as many times as you want, and they maintain their shape. They're made in the USA, and for a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering his premium MyPillows for the lowest price ever. You can get a standard queen premium MyPillow for $29.98. It's originally $69.98. That's a $40 savings. Kings are only $5 more. Remember, all MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code ERIC. There you'll find not only this amazing offer, but also deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream Bed Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, and MyPillow Towel Sets. Folks, you know I use these products, and they're fantastic. Call 800-978-3057 and use promo code ERIC. Or call 800-978-3057. Use the promo code ERIC.
Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. You know him as the author of a lot of books. The new one is called The Beirut Protocol. It really does sound like a threat. Take your vitamins, get fresh air, exercise. Otherwise, we're going to have to resort to the Beirut protocol, and that's nasty. That's not true. What's the Beirut protocol? Why don't I ask you that?
Well, the Beirut protocol is a political thriller that deals with a character named Marcus Ryker. Ryker, in previous books that I'd written about him, is a combat veteran Marine, served in Afghanistan, served in Iraq, decorated, wounded in combat, goes on to work for the United States Secret Service, rises to the elite presidential protective detail, where again, wounded in protecting the president, highly decorated. A tragedy in his own life, the murder of his wife and son in a previous book, leaves him both at the top of his game professionally, but deeply wounded personally. And as the Beirut protocol emerges, he is now working for the Central Intelligence Agency, and he goes up onto the Israeli-Lebanon border to assess the situation up there, because the American government is worried Iran and its terror proxy forces like Hezbollah in Lebanon are getting ready to blow up a Saudi-Israeli peace treaty that in my series is in the process of being cooked up. Right, that's fiction right now, but I think it's coming. We'll talk about that on a different show maybe. But I'm not giving this away. In the first chapter of the Beirut Protocol, there's an attack on the border by Hezbollah cell. There's a big firefight. Marcus and his team are captured and pulled deep behind enemy lines. And up above ground, a big missile war unleashes, drawing the United States suddenly back into another Middle Eastern war. That's the setup for the Beirut Protocol. And let's pray to God it never comes true.
Well, when you talk about a Saudi-Israel pact, potentially, it is amazing, of course, that Trump did tremendous things with some of Israel's enemies. Talk about that for a bit, Egypt and so on, because, you know, nobody really believed that this was happening. And of course, the mainstream media, the New York Times, they barely report on it. They can't say anything nice about Trump because they believe him to be the devil, even though they don't believe in God. But go ahead.
No, it's true. And actually, I've got in September, I've got a nonfiction book coming out, my first in many years, called Enemies and Allies. And I go into 20 years after 9/11, where are we with the enemies in the Middle East? And who are our allies? And what exactly did Trump do to persuade four Arab countries to make peace with Israel when no Arab country has made peace with Israel in a quarter of a century? That story is so fascinating. And I sat in the Oval Office and talked to him about it. Those conversations are in the book, sat with Pompeo, exclusive interviews, and my meetings with all the leaders of all the countries involved, except Iran. I was not, I did not have the opportunity to sit down with the supreme leader and his apocalyptic thugs. But this is an amazing story. And the short version is Trump and his team decided to throw out all the conventional wisdom of the peace caucus or the peace industry in Washington that never makes peace, because they always think it's Israel's fault. They always think that the Palestinian leadership, set aside the people, but the leadership is always just need one more incentive, one more deal, one more couple hundred million dollar offer, and then they'll make peace. But the Palestinian leadership never do. And what Trump decided is, listen, Iran's a threat. Obama and Biden threw them under the bus with the Iran nuclear deal. Let's go build an alliance between Israel, the United States, and our Sunni Arab allies. And we're not going to agree on every detail, but this is the moment. And everybody told him he couldn't do it. Everybody told him he was a moron. And now he's got four Arab-Israeli peace deals under his belt. He was right. And I told him face-to-face in the Oval Office, listen, I was a never Trumper until the Thursday before the election. The first election and in 2016. And I voted for him, but reluctantly. And I wasn't convinced, but I told him to his face. Eric, you knew him. You know him. How many people have actually used the term never Trumper to President Trump's face in the Oval Office? But I told him, look, I didn't believe you, But you are delivering over and over and over again on life, on Israel, on peace, on economic growth, on tax cuts, on dealing tough with the Russians. And I thanked him, moving the embassy to Jerusalem. I mean, you know, it was a messy 4 years, but there's so much to be proud about and grateful for. And I am one of these rare never Trumpers that concluded, yeah, there were some things I disagree with him about. And still, I wasn't happy with January, okay? But overall, it was amazing. And and we need to be, especially as evangelicals, we need to be people who say, if we're wrong, we admit it. And if we, and if somebody's doing something really right, that we ought to give credit to that, give honor where honor is due. It's an amazing story. And I know Jared Kushner is working on a book about these Middle East deals. Ambassador David Friedman here in Israel is working on a book. I think mine will be the first, Enemies and Allies, coming out in September. But
man, you write, people say story. I'm prolific, and I know that I'm not prolific. You're actually prolific. Folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. The Beirut Protocol is the book. If you go to mypillow.com and use the code Eric, you can't get the Beirut Protocol, I'm sorry to say. We'll be right back talking about the Beirut Protocol and Mike Lindell. Use the code Eric. Thank you. So I'd like to know when you got the notion. Said I'd like to know when you got the notion. Well, folks, I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. Joel, when we came, before we went on the air, you kind of shocked me a little bit. You said that you were reading my book, Fish Out of Water, with your wife. I'm not kidding. Like, I'm actually like amazed at that, just because, you know, you live
you
in
shouldn't
Jerusalem.
Be. I love your work, Eric. I love your work. I actually read Bonhoeffer twice. Now, that's like a 15,000 word book. So, you know, the fact that I read it twice showed how much I loved it, was fascinated with it. And actually,
200,000 words.
200,000. Okay.
220,000 words, to be accurate. Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, and you know, for the first 90%, I'm thinking, why doesn't he get to the point? No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I love the Bonhoeffer book and others that you've done. But this one, I have been so immersed in writing my own books, I didn't have time to pick up this one. But my wife said, my wife did, and she said, stop everything. I mean, literally, stop writing. I need to read you this first chapter. And I was like, okay. And she goes, you know, we love Eric. And I said, I know, but I mean, we have to read it, listen to it right now. I mean, this is the, but she just got hooked. And so we've been working our way through it. And again, you do have a very long first sentence proving that. Yeah, on purpose, but it works. I was
it
like.
It ends with the Reagan assassination.
How long is that sentence? I'm just curious. The first sentence of the book.
I don't know. It's right behind me. Hold on. Are you serious? Like the first.
I purposely, for thrillers, I write very short first sentences that sort of, you know, and
so this
short
is from the introduction, right? The introduction?
The introduction, yeah.
Okay, this is the introduction. It was February 2nd, 2012, and I was at the podium at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington, D.C., 8 feet away from President Barack Obama, who was politely giving me his rapt attention in that monstrously vast Hilton Hotel ballroom, outside of which President Ronald Reagan was shot by a man inspired to his assassination attempt by a woman with whom I once danced at Yale.
Well, it hooked us. It's unconventional way to begin, but you just have such you have a great story, but you also have a great way of telling the story. And
I didn't know I was fishing for compliments when I asked you to talk about my book. Thank you. Seriously, I mean, you never know what people think, but I appreciate that very much. The reason I particularly appreciate it coming from you is because somebody who writes thrillers, page turners, understands that there's a great art to keeping someone interested. Yeah. And I don't have the freedom to craft my plot in that way. But I always feel that when I'm writing, I want the sentences to engage the reader so that they want to keep going. And it's not like I work too hard at that. It's kind of like an instinctive thing. But when people do tell you I couldn't put it down, that's, of course, you know, music to the author's ears. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And it's very sincere, because being a storyteller is in many ways a lost art in conservatism. I don't mean generally. Hollywood does it great, except what stories are they telling sometimes, you know? But yeah. Conservatives are so focused sometimes, too often, just on truth. If I just tell the truth.
You are exactly correct. I mean, I've talked about this many times. You are exactly correct. Yes.
And Jesus said something so, of course, you know, he said many things that were very brilliant, and of course, divinely inspired. But in John 12:49, there's a great verse for any communicator, but especially for those who love Jesus. And that is this. Jesus said in John 12:49, the Father commands me what to say and how to say it. It's not enough just to have good content. The question is, how do we explain truth in a way that engages people's minds and our hearts and our souls? And that is difficult to do. For a novelist, it's particularly hard because you're sitting and looking at a computer, a blank screen, and it's like the little cursor is daring you to fill it up with 120,000 words that are all made up. I mean, not the words, but the story. Like, that's why they have the word curse right in the word cursor, because it seems impossible to persuade someone to spend $28 and several days of their lives to not watch Days of Their Lives, but actually read the book. And especially if it's not true. Now, what you're dealing with is, and especially in this one, but in all your books, is true. And how do you tell true things that happened in a way that's engaging to people? I'm talking about true themes, but with fictional characters and fictional.
I don't have the freedom. I don't have the freedom to say, you know what? I think I need to introduce like a sexy spy figure here. That'll, you know, I can't do that because that didn't happen in my life or in Luther's or Bonhoeffer's, whatever. Well, anyway, thank you. I didn't mean for us to go.
Well, Bonhoeffer certainly had. Bonhoeffer was an assassin or part of an assassin plot.
Not
you
quite.
Got that in there. That must have been at the late 10% piece.
Close enough. Yeah.
I'm teasing.
Well, I just want to get back to what you do. The Beirut Protocol. Which book is this? Is this the fifth book in the series?
It's the fourth novel in this series with Marcus Riker. And it's my 16th novel overall.
I want to ask you this. When did you decide you wanted to write novels or thrillers? What was your, because I don't remember this now.
I was eight years old. It was the year I came to faith in Christ. And it was the year that I somehow just knew, either making movies or telling stories through books, this is what I want to do with my life. I ended up going to film school at Syracuse University. I didn't really think you needed to go to school to write a novel, but telling stories and telling them visually just absolutely captured me. Now, it's interesting because for the next 10 years, I became a failed political consultant in Washington. Everybody that I worked for lost, including I was on the comeback campaign team of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He'd been prime minister from 96 to 99. He lost his reelection. I was hired on his team. Small team in 2000. He didn't come back for 9 more years, Eric. And so I went through political detox. I'm out. I'm clean, though every 4 years I need a patch. But all that experience helping Steve Forbes of Forbes magazine lose 2 presidential campaigns and about $70 million of his daughter's inheritance, but at least it helped me become a political thriller writer. And these books are now read by the King of Jordan, the King of Saudi Arabia, George W. Bush reads these books, Pence, Pompeo, as well as, you know, millions of others. So I don't know how I ended up doing this, but I love it. And I'm grateful.
It's amazing, honestly, that to hear that you want to do this from age 8. We're going to be right back. Final segment with Joel Rosenberg. The book is The Beirut Protocol. Don't go away.
Got out of town on a boat. Life was so wonderful.
folks. I'm talking to Joel Rosenberg. You can read his book, The Beirut Protocol. You can read his many books. You can also go to allisraelnews.com and allarabnews.com. Joel, I'm really glad that you've launched those websites. That's kind of a big deal.
It's so frustrating to deal, as you know, in the world of media, and people ask, you know, whom do we trust? Now, that's one of the reasons you decided to go into radio, to give people both entertainment and information and analysis. For me, I'm living in the most fascinating country on the planet, the cradle of civilization, the state of Israel, where Jesus is coming back one day. So interesting. And I live in a very dangerous neighborhood in this Iranian, infused region. But I'm amazed how little coverage is happening, even in the American media, even in good media. It's just not a story unless there's a massive war. People just don't cover it. But evangelicals are certainly intrigued with what's happening in Israel, in the region. And I just got sick of the soft bias. We don't, you know, editors saying we don't care. Or hard bias, we care, but we're not writing anything nice about anything that's good that's happening. And then there's war. There's Al Jazeera and Iranian media and Russian media and Turkish media. So we created these two sites. One of the reasons we created the All Arab News site, Eric, is because I have traveled and met with and interviewed all these Muslim, Arab, and other leaders in the region. Many of them are not ready to be interviewed by All Israel News. Yeah, the president of Israel was, and the defense minister is, all the, but Arabs are like, yeah, I'm not sure if I'm ready. So it's almost like the second section of the newspaper, and they're cross-linked. And it's just a fascinating. I've interviewed some of the most prominent, powerful Muslim leaders in the world, as well as Arab Christians, as well as Hormoz Shariat, of course, we were talking about, an Iranian Shia Muslim convert to Christ. So we're covering every angle, and we're providing analysis. And while it's primarily for the world's 600 million evangelicals, it's by no means exclusively evangelical. Every story isn't, you know, drenched with the Bible, but we were appealing to Jewish people, to Muslim people, but people who are interested in this region and are sick of the bias in the media, where they either don't hear the truth or it's just mocked and belittled.
I have to ask you, Joel. I mean, your books seem to me to be the perfect thing. You know, if I were running a movie studio, I would option them and make movies out of them. I'm assuming there's been some talk about that for some of them.
We've had a number of deals over the years. We've got a deal right now for one of my novels called The Auschwitz Escape. The most dramatic escape in human history was out of the Auschwitz prison camp, death camp, concentration camp in southern Poland during the Holocaust. I would love to see this movie made. It seems like, you know, it's very hard to get Hollywood people to go with people like me and the stories I tell. I don't think it's impossible, but it's very difficult. And it tends to be that the deals fall through eventually. But
yeah, it's not easy. We're very close with the Bonhoeffer film. I think we need another $2 million if anybody's got a couple of mills burning a hole in their pocket. But it's just taken years to get it together. So we're pretty much ready to go. But it is interesting what gets made, what doesn't, and the bias of the Hollywood establishment, obviously not pro-Israel. We're out of time, but what a joy to be with you. Folks, the book is The Beirut Protocol. Joel Rosenberg, always good to speak with you. And if people want a copy of The Beirut Protocol, if they go to MyPillow.com and use the code Eric, they won't be able to get it. Just so you know. Joel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Folks, I don't want to forget to remind you, Church People is a film that's available at salemnow.com. There's all kinds of stuff available at salemnow.com. You can check it out. If you use the code Eric, who knows what will happen? Who knows? MyPillow will send you slippers. Just use the code Eric and good things will happen. Salemnow.com. Church People is the film.